Welcome to Grace-Filled Grit. I'm your host, Lana Stenner, and we are chatting all about growing your faith, family, and the backyard farm. Here at the Grace-Filled Homestead, we are having honest, hard, and authentic conversations with some amazing guests about getting back to the basics and what's important in life. We are not for everyone, and we don't clean up our conversations, so you will get the unedited chat. Each episode, you can expect practical tips and encouragement. I am so honored to have you join us today. So grab a cup of coffee and let's do this thing. Hey, friend, welcome back to the Grace-Filled Grit podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Christy Purifoy. We've had her on the show before, and she was one of your favorites. We are in full spring planting over here, and I am so excited to chat with Christy about the value of gardening and how much it brings into our lives. Welcome, Christy. I'm so glad you're here with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and happy spring. It's officially spring now.
Finally. Oh, yes. My goodness. I'm so excited. Great timing to have you on. Exactly. Our listeners loved your last episode when we had you on. But for anyone new, tell them a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I live in southeastern Pennsylvania. I have lived in many places in my life, but I have been gardening and placemaking here in Pennsylvania for a little over 10 years. I live with my husband and four kids here, two of whom are, you know, starting to leave home. I've got the older two in college, but I still claim them. I still claim them among my four. And I'm a gardener. I'm a writer. I am still surprised that this is who I am and what I've become, because it isn't the plan I had for my life. But it has been a good gift from God to be a placemaker and a gardener here at Maplehurst in Pennsylvania, and to be able to tell the stories that have literally grown out of the ground here. It is a real privilege.
Well, your place is a Victorian farmhouse there in Pennsylvania. It's absolutely beautiful. What is your favorite part of your property, especially this time of year in the spring? What's your favorite?
Oh, I have an easy answer for you, because I can actually peek over my shoulder and see it out of my little office window here. It is probably the largest, oldest saucer magnolia tree I've ever seen in my life. It was probably planted, it might have been planted 100 years ago here at Maplehurst. It is, if your listeners don't all know it, I grew up in the South where we had magnolia trees, but we had the evergreen magnolias, which are beautiful trees and put out in the summer, you know, big white flowers. But a northern saucer magnolia is deciduous, so it loses all its leaves. And then early spring, it just erupts in full pink glory. I think of it, I always think it looks like a 100,000 pink butterflies landed on the tree. And it's been blooming now for a couple weeks, and it's always kind of the first beauty of spring. Sometimes we don't get it because of late frosts. Sometimes the blooms are cut short. It is a very precious gift when we receive it. It's not an every year gift. But this time of year, it is absolutely my favorite spot. And the perfume, if you just to go under that tree and just smell the perfume of it, it's incredible.
Okay, that is so, okay, first of all, I love that your office window looks at your favorite spot. There's nothing better than that. But that's so interesting that you said that, because I have one in a container right now that we're getting ready to plant. And for literally, and it's the pink, you know, it's not the white, it's the pink. And for probably 3 or 4 years, every time in spring, I see all of our neighbors have them, and they are just so stunning. And I'm like, that is the most gorgeous plant I seriously think on the planet. I mean, it is absolutely stunning. And it's like pink, but almost pink leaves. There are so many blooms all over it. And every year I say, I'm going to find one. And I don't see them out at the nurseries or anywhere. No. And so I've just kind of gotten busy and blew it off. And I found one week before last in a container. And I'm like, I'm sure this is not the right time of year to plant it, but we are going to. So that's so funny that you said that. I'm super excited about it.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. You will not, I was going to say, you will not be disappointed. The truth is, you will, because magnolias are heartbreakers and there are
Yes, if they
springs
don't, yes.
where they don't bloom, but it is so worthwhile. And I think it just makes the flowers when they come, to me, it has always felt like a little grace note from God, like just a little sweet gift. I can't rely on it. I can't control it. It doesn't come like clockwork, but when it comes, it is like grace. So I'm so glad that you're doing that.
Yes, I'm so excited. I mean, it is the most beautiful plant. I'm going to
Yes.
just say that. It is my favorite plant on the planet at this moment, anyway. It might change, but I love it. I love it. Okay, so I know that you are a big fan of chickens in the garden. So, what are so, because we have on our listeners, and we have a lot of listeners that are chicken ladies, just like I am. What are some ways that they can help out a gardener?
Oh, I love this question. And I do. I love my chickens. And that too is a surprise to me because I didn't grow up an animal person. In fact, my father kept chickens in our backyard, and I was such a fussy little girl and fussy little teenage girl that I didn't even want to eat the eggs. I thought, ew, they came from the backyard. No thanks. But yes, I love my chickens today. I can't imagine my garden without them. But it is. And I write about this actually in my newest book because it isn't they aren't they can cause problems. So this time of year, if I have spread out some fresh mulch, that will be where they go, and they will have that mulch kicked up so fast. But they are worth it for just the delight of their company in the garden. I do, I control them here and there if there's a spot I don't want them to dig, but their waste, added to my compost pile is good food for the gardens. They give back, I mean, every day to eat these delicious eggs that are just nothing like the supermarket eggs. I have my chickens right in the middle of my raised bed garden where I grow vegetables, herbs, flowers, and though they're often kind of pinned away again from the things I don't want them to eat, I love having them right there. I can feed them weeds and add those vitamins to my eggs. To me, they're a part of just this, creation and nature has these cycles of interconnectedness. And so having some kind of animal connected to our growing and to our gardening is really important. And it's just a beautiful way to see that kind of fuller picture of how God has created the world. And how just all these beautiful systems kind of fit together and life begets life. So chickens, though, I think are kind of one of the easiest, garden animals you can keep. I know, we could talk more about goats and ducks and other things, but chickens are easy, and I'm so glad they're in my garden.
They do. They bring so much joy, and they are just natural little tillers. I mean, I'm kind of on that no-till garden thing, but they just turn the soil, they turn the mulch over, they prepare things so well. They know what they're
They
doing for
do.
sure.
They
And then I
do.
usually have to sweep them on out of there and lock them back up because
Yes.
they will go to, they love my strawberry plants. So I'm like, I don't let them back in that
That's
area
right, mine
anymore.
too.
So yeah. Oh, that's fun. That's fun. So propagating, I know you're really good at that and into that. And I have done some propagating, but, and I guess I don't really know if it's even called that because I do it in the soil. But which is a little different than you because you have talked about propagating in water. So if someone like me doesn't really know a whole lot about that, but I love the propagate. Like I've done the basil where I just stick it in the soil and I have all these basil plants and they were dirt, they were free basically. So it saves a lot of money. So tell us a little bit about propagating plants in water.
And I'll say, first of all, sometimes I write about this. I feel like some folks are what I think of as scientist gardeners, right? And they just really get into the science of this and the details of it. Others are more poet gardeners and I are artist gardeners, and I am absolutely on that side of things. Never been a scientist. But that is what I think makes this so fun. It's why I love to offer these ideas to folks, is that even if you're like me and you don't understand the science and you forget the details and you have a hard time with keeping track of how to take care of this, that, and the other, you can always snip a growing stem of something and drop it in a jar of water, and there is a good chance that roots will grow. And if roots grow, Then you can plant that out and you've got something new. And so you'll learn in time, just through practice, trial and error about what seems to take root very easily. For instance, if it's very fleshy and soft, it probably will root in water. If it's woody, it might be harder, but not necessarily. You know, woody things sometimes do. Like I've got some pussy willow branches actually right now that I didn't even intend to propagate, but I put them in a vase to be pretty, and next thing I knew, they had grown roots.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you never know. House plants, I love to do this with all the herbs. Sometimes you will even kind of like my pussy willow. You'll cut herbs to have on the kitchen counter to cook with. You keep them in a jar with fresh water, and if you keep changing out the water, if it looks a little icky, and use the herbs, sometimes before you know it, they've grown roots in your jar, and there you go, brand new plants, some geraniums, you know. So you don't have to keep track of what works, what doesn't. Just try it,
Just try it.
and now you're propagating plants and creating plants for free, which just adds to the joy. It's not a to-do, it's not a must-do. It's a why not? You get to do this and it can be fun.
I love it. I love it. And I know my husband, I haven't done it myself, but my husband had really good luck with grapevines and blackberry vines, shrubs, whatever you want to
There you
call it.
go.
And I think it was the same way. I think he just accidentally was pruning them and put them in a bucket and it rained. And then all of a sudden we have
Oh,
plants.
that's wild. Yes.
So
I
yeah.
love
So
that.
would you say, I mean, obviously in our situation, it didn't matter temperature, but would you say room temperature water, hot water, cold water?
Right. I just, you know, I just keep it at that room temperature and starting out, you know, not too hot, not too cold. You're not trying to shock anything, but really it doesn't, you know, plants are, I think, more resilient than we realize. Life is more resilient than we realize, which just fills me with so much hope because we humans can be, you know, not the best always at taking care of life out there, but thankfully it is, you know, this creation is very resilient. So yeah, room temperature water, and just keep an eye on it. And you know, if you have a kid who needs to do a science fair project, like this would be perfect for them. They could test out all those variables, you know, let them figure out the science.
Yes. And I think I'm so glad you brought that up because gardening is just such a like homeschool moms or people that are looking for just a way to connect with their children. I just think gardening is it. I know, when we had a middle schooler that was kind of, on the struggle bus there for a little while, and we're just like, we're going outside. Your phone, you're no phone for a while. And we're just gonna, and it was like a miracle drug. No drugs, but it was like this just everything got better when we were just outside a lot more and spending time with the family and working on things together. And I just think it is one of the answers to a lot of the
It
problems in
is.
this world. I don't want to oversimplify it, but I totally think that we should definitely do more of that. So in your book, you talk about how gardens grow roots. So tell us a little bit about that.
I think so I am all about this idea of a rooted life, and partially that's because I didn't feel rooted for so long. I moved a lot, or I would find myself in temporary living situations like many people, and I felt that lack of settledness, that lack really of connection to place. But I think actually we can define gardening as really nothing more or less than just a very intimate relationship with a place. And so the fact of cultivating this relationship with a place, it roots us. It helps us sort of sink ourselves more deeply into the place where we are. And really, it's as simple as noticing. So you know, it's, you know, somebody might look at me and say, "Well, it's easy for you to say, Christy, you own a home, you're staying, you know, you have some land you can garden on." But I could tell you, I lived for 10 years in Chicago, and I felt rooted in my little South Side community. In my little apartment, we had no backyard. We were on the third floor, but we had a balcony. And I in the summer kept pots of flowers out on the balcony. And it made me notice the weather. It made me pay attention to the sun. I noticed if bees came by. It was just that relationship that I had because I kept some pots on my balcony that helped me to be just more rooted in that place. So wherever you are, whatever kind of gardening you do, I think it starts up a relationship and it gives us an opportunity to just pay attention in ways that we might not otherwise be paying attention. And that is really the beginning of living, of growing roots and of connecting more deeply with the places we call home, even temporarily. So.
And as you're talking, I'm just thinking about this past week. We sold my mom's home. My dad passed a few months ago, and so we're still in the childhood home and moved her into an apartment. And it was closing week. And so I went back over there and it was very interesting. The whole house is empty by now. And where I felt like I needed to spend my last moments in my childhood home was outside. And, I walked where the strawberry patch was, which it's been gone for a few years. They've gotten older and haven't been able to keep it up. But, and then I walked down to another spot where in fourth grade, they gave us a tree, at school and we planted it. And now it's, huge, huge, huge. And so it is interesting that I wasn't necessarily spending time walking through my bedroom, walking through the kitchen. I mean, we went through all that, but my true special places were outside. And so that's so interesting that you say that because that really it was, that's where my roots were. And it was the outside locations, not necessarily inside as much. So yeah, it's just beautiful memories that we get to take even after we're gone, even
It's true.
after, it's not our property anymore. Those memories are like in my heart, ingrained in my DNA. And they'll never, because I was like, oh, I wish I could dig up that massive tree and take it with us. But it's like, I don't need to because it is ingrained in my soul now, of all those memories. So I
Oh,
love
I'm
that
so
you brought that up.
yes, I'm so glad you said that because this is the other thing about a rooted life, the kind of rooted life we cultivate partially through gardening, is that if you move, you take those roots with you. And that's exactly what you've described. It's like, yes, you're transplanted, but the that deeper life you are living is still a part of you, and it is still enriching your life through memory and experience and knowledge. So even if the garden itself disappears, even if the plants disappear, even if you have to sell the home or the apartment and move on, you take something precious with you that allows you to continue to put down roots wherever you go. That's something I couldn't have known except for the moving that I've done. But I know, for instance, like you, my father's garden, my childhood garden, still in some sense lives in me and is a part of what I'm doing here at Maplehurst. So that's something as parents we give roots to our children in that way, even if and even because they're going to grow up and go on into their own lives and places. But even if we're renting, even if we're a student, we've got a dorm or an apartment and just a few pots. Like, we are beginning to live in a rooted way that will change, it can really change the course of our lives and change the future and how we live it. So it's important, I think, no matter where you are, what stage, and you've described it so well. That's a precious story. I can't believe that you've just experienced that recently. That's powerful.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I was like, oh wow, that's what just happened with me. That just happened. Okay, so native plants. I know I was reading about one of your awesome stories about your maple trees that line your drive. So what can we learn from that? Do you want to share that story? And what can you learn about native plants that way?
Well, first of all, I'll just say, I mean, I think any of our listeners, if they have any familiarity with gardening conversations of recent years, they're hearing things about native plants. And sadly, a lot of what we hear can feel, to some of us, very finger wagging, very, maybe even a little scary, like, oh, there's all these things I shouldn't plant and I should, and how can I keep track? And it can be really overwhelming. So when I talk about native plants, and how I live it myself, it is not in a finger wagging sense, not in a, oh my goodness, don't do these 10 bad things. Rather, it is this invitation. When we learn about native plants, native fauna, native flora, there is an opportunity to just increase the abundant life of our homes and our places. So to me, it is all invitation. It's another path to just more joy in life in the garden. And And that's been kind of a hard one, hard-earned truth here at Maplehurst, because when we came here, I mean, the name alone tells you Maplehurst. It was named for all the maple trees, and especially this long, dramatic driveway planting of parallel maple trees, just stunning and memorable in our community, just so visually arresting. But these trees, since we came here, have been slowly dying, slowly falling down, slowly breaking apart. We only have a few left. And for years, I just grieved the trees, and I didn't know. I kept thinking, I've got to, how do I make up for what is being lost? And I couldn't see it. It felt only like loss and only like sadness. But it's been interesting over the years as I've learned more about the trees and about the kind of trees that really support life in where I live in Pennsylvania, that I've realized this is a real opportunity, that the trees that were planted are not so good for our local ecology. They tend to shade out and crowd out some of the trees that support more insect life, which supports more bird life, which, I mean, I love the bird song, so I want more of that. So now I've seen this opportunity in the space that has been created. I can plant oak trees, and I can plant black cherries and pin oaks, and what else about sycamore and oh, tulip poplars, and so while there is a sadness in the goodbye that we've said to the beauty that someone planted 100 years ago, I love that I have this chance to make new choices and to plant for the future and to leave kind of our own legacy of tree planting. And it's, again, not the scientist gardener here, just the poet gardener, but I love learning about the particular life that a tree supports. So then I can start to look for those butterflies or those caterpillars or those birds. I can say, well, this is a butterfly I want to see in my garden. So, oh, look, if I plant the pawpaw tree or the black cherry, I might see that. And to me, that's just exciting. That is possibility. That is hope. And so, yeah, I just encourage listeners, like, dive into those conversations, learn about native plants. But if it starts to feel like that kind of finger wagging, don't do this, don't do that, just set that aside and tell yourself, hey, I am in it for the life. I'm in it for more life in my gardens, and then have fun. Just have fun with it.
And I think that's so true, because also the native plants are going to be easier to grow. So for those of you that are beginners or just have not had great luck with something, it might be you're in the wrong zone or it's not supposed to be in your state. And I've had kind of rebellious moments where I'm like, I don't care what they say. I don't care if I'm not in that right zone. I'm going to try it. And it has worked.
You never
Most
know.
of the time it doesn't, but I do love that freedom, but also having the education behind it where you kind of know, all right, this may not look like it does over in that other state, because it's not native here, but we're gonna try it. So I love your story about the maple, and it's right down your driveway,
It
right?
is,
Doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so on to mental health, which is, you wouldn't think that's really tied to gardening, but I kind of think it, as I mentioned about, one of our kiddos, I think it just was one of the keys to really a happy, successful life. We're seeing so many issues with the youngsters these days and rise of depression, and society is just missing the joy and their happiness. Something is obviously missing. And of course, I'm a firm believer of going outside. Anytime you're stressed or upset about something, if you go outside first, a lot of times it takes care of itself. You've talked about how gardening promotes wholeness. How can it help a person become whole again?
Yes, I too am passionate about this. I experience it myself. If I don't get a little bit of outside time every day, I feel that in my mood, my body. Wholeness, so in a couple ways. On the one hand, there's the science of it. It's amazing to me what we're learning these days about the interactions between our bodies and gardens and soil. We now know, for instance, that there is something special about particularly garden soil. So that means soil that has been has extra goodness added to it, the way you add compost and so into your garden. That when our skin, when our hands touch that soil, it has an actual effect in our brains on our mood. I mean, that just is incredible. So there's that side of it, but then there's also for me, there is this sense of belonging that is restored to us when we cultivate beauty and life around us. And we know, I know from the story scripture tells us that is how we were made and to live from the beginning. We were always meant to live in a garden. And we have gotten away from that. We've gotten away from that through sin. We've gotten away from that just in some of the, what may feel like the necessities of modern life and our jobs and where we have to live. But if we can do even small things to reconnect to the natural world, then something about who we are and how we were created in God's image and what his plans for us were initially is restored to us. And so to me, that's part of what I mean by wholeness is sort of we get fitted back into the picture of God's world, not perfectly, not still with sin and insects and plant diseases, and not perfectly, but it is restorative, and it can feel like instead of the fragmentation we're so used to, the bits of our lives not fitting together, stepping into a garden, being needed by your garden, being nurtured and nourished back from, by the beauty of your garden, it just puts the pieces back together in these small ways that I think, well, it's meaningful also this time of year as we record. We're nearing heading closer and closer to Easter, and I think about Jesus saying, this day you will be with me in paradise, and knowing like paradise, that image is a garden image. And I think it's, we can say, yes, I'm waiting on that ultimate paradise, but I can start tasting that today. I can live toward that today in small ways. And one of those ways is through gardening. And just one more reason why it is such a precious, good gift from our Creator.
Yes, and you can see the progress too. I know in the
Yes,
past, if
yes.
I'm working so hard and I feel like I'm on a hamster wheel and I'm not going anywhere. I remember one time I even told my husband, I feel like I need to paint a wall so I can actually see
Yes.
it change color, so I know that I'm getting something done. But the garden does that for you.
It
Like you,
does.
like every week, the little thing pops up, and then the next time you go out, it's a
Yes.
little bit bigger. And I think maybe it's a character flaw that I need to see progress. And it is all over the garden. It is, you can't have a garden without seeing some growth and what your hard work was. It shows up. I mean, and
It
this, like you
does.
said, not always perfect, but you can definitely see the results with it too. So that's so
You're
good.
right.
So kind of tied to that is, the hope. You talk a lot about how gardens bring hope, and that is a little bit different than the wholeness. But it's tied. So talk a little bit about that.
It is. I think the hope is really, it's kind of partially why I saved it for last in the book Seed Time and Harvest, is because I think hope, for me at least, has been the fruit, the gift of gardening over years, over seasons, over time. It isn't always immediately apparent, especially if we're a new gardener. And the other thing that happens when we garden is we lose plants. Plants die. This is, this is going to happen if you garden. And in fact, it can be very helpful. It's how you learn. And some plants are just short-lived, and so a death is a part of it. And it's actually literally what feeds the soil for our garden. So in the short term, it can feel not always so hopeful. We can feel like we're failing. We can wonder if it's adding up. But over the years, over the seasons, just that repetition of winter being followed by spring, of plants dying or setting seed or going to sleep and becoming dormant and then re-emerging in the spring. What I have felt is that it just builds in me this kind of resilient hope that even when I step into a winter season or even when the weeds feel overwhelming, I am drawing on all this experience of knowing what can follow. And so it just feels like I am less shaken in every sense by the things that feel like bad news. And I mean bad news in the garden, but also bad news in the world. Somehow it just grows to encompass both. And I share this too because there's, when we talk about creation care or just our involvement as humans in the world, there's a lot of bad news out there. There's a lot of hard stuff, and it can feel, the more you learn about it, it can feel like, gosh, why would I have anything to do with this world of taking care of creation? Because it's, there's a lot of, once you learn more, you know more, and it can be a bit depressing. But I just encourage, or I just share from my own experience that the ultimate fruit has really been this sense of just the resiliency of life as God has made it, the goodness of God's invitation for us to participate in that, even though He knows we'll do it imperfectly and we'll make mistakes, and yet He still invites us into the garden. And then just this sense over the years of goodness slowly accumulating, the way good soil accumulates over years, that it is, as you say, adding up to something. There is growth. It's just, yeah, the fruit of that is a hope that is just much harder, I think, for bad news to shake or temporary circumstances to shake. I'll put it this way. It is a hope that has roots. It is a rooted hope.
Yes, yes.
And I'm so
It is.
grateful for it.
Yes, I totally agree. So, what are you looking the most forward to harvesting, either in the summer or down into the fall? What is your thing that you're most looking forward to?
Oh, great question.
I
It's so
know there's a
hard to
list, a mile
choose.
long.
Yes. For me, being such a beauty lover, I mean, I do grow some food, and I try to get excited about my tomatoes and other th and my kale, and I am. I grow them. I love them. But oh, it will always be the flowers that just feed me. And so dahlias are a big love, and every year I order more, and I've ordered some. I think, where are you going to put those, Christine? You are out
I
of
just
room.
had that same thought because I have a bunch, and then I'm like, I know some are supposed to show up next week, and I'm like, ah, no, I don't need
I
any more.
just am always tempted to add more, but the beauty is just so enticing. It's such a gift. So I'm super excited to start cutting the bouquets, and my favorites would really be the cosmos, the zinnias, which are so easy from seed, and
Yes,
then the
yes.
dahlias, which take a little more pampering, but not much, and are such a
Yes.
gift. So, oh, I can't wait for
Yeah.
the summer
I
flowers.
love those three too. Those are some of my favorites as well. Well, you have a beautiful new book here. If you're watching on YouTube, you can actually see the cover here. It's called Seed Time and Harvest: How Gardens Grow Roots, Connection, Wholeness, and Hope. And as I had mentioned before we even started recording, this book, the photography is just stunning, but your writing could just stand on its own without
Thank
one
you.
picture in there. It's just absolutely beautiful. So where can our friends find this? Where is it on sale? How do they get this if they want it?
Yeah, I always say wherever books are sold, it should be available. It is out there. It's released in early March, so it's available. So you can certainly find it on Amazon, but you can also, go to christianbook.com or bookshop.org if you want to support your local indie bookstore. And I love too about these beautiful gift books that my publisher offers is that you often find them at little boutiques and garden
Yes,
centers too. So
yes.
I always tell people, if you have a favorite little local boutique or local, the kind of lovely little independent boutique that sells little things for the garden or home, you can request it from them. And I love seeing it show up in shops like that. We don't have as many bookstores these days, but we still have these lovely little boutiques, and I love seeing the beautiful books that they have. And and if you want to see what else I have, just head to my website, christypurefoy.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Christy, for coming on. Well, I'll add those links into the show notes. This has been such a joy to have you and perfect timing as we're,
It
doing
is.
this spring thing. It's just a beautiful time of year. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Grace Filled Grit. I know that your time is valuable and I truly appreciate you being here. I hope it was helpful and that you'll share it with a friend. In order to schedule amazing guests on our show, we could use some good reviews. So if you've enjoyed this episode, I'd be honored if you could head over to the podcast app on your phone, tap the album art for the Grace Filled Grit podcast, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and write a review. I'm looking forward to our next episode, and I hope you'll join us again. Blessings to you today, friend, as you live out your own grace-filled grit.